Nicholas Thompson has long been known for his sharp, inquisitive mind as the former editor-in-chief of Wired, CEO of The Atlantic, and a writer who moves fluidly between technology, culture, and the human stories that animate both. In his new memoir, The Running Ground, A Father, A Son, and the Simplest of Sports, Thompson turns inward, exploring the most enduring relationship of all, the one between a parent and a child. The book traces his deepening bond with his son through running, the sport Thompson has loved his entire life, and the way miles on the road become a space for connection and conversation and growth. He reflects on his own upbringing, the competitive drive that shaped him, and the lessons learned from racing at both elite and amateur levels. What emerges is a meditation on resilience and vulnerability and the rare clarity that comes when the world narrows to the rhythm of feet on pavement. Nicholas Thompson joins us to talk about running, fatherhood, and the unexpected places where meaning is found. And Nicholas, a delight to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
It's so great to be here. That was a spot on great introduction.
Well, thank you very much. I love this book. So tell us a little bit about the origin story of it, because it really dates back. It seems to me it dates back. Of course, your interest in running, but then really as far as the project of the death of your father.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, the origin comes back to my father was a very complicated man. Just to give the very quick summary, when people would ask, what do your parents do for a living? I would say my mother is an art historian in Boston and my father runs a male brothel in Bali. And when I was coming back from his funeral in 2017, I decided to write a letter to my children explaining what he had meant to me, right, and why we had been so close despite the many troubles of his life. And I thought it would be a short letter. And I was on the plane. He had died in the Philippines. I was flying back from Manila to JFK. And I kept writing the whole flight and I ended up with 6,000 words and I was crying. The process of writing that letter made me realize how deeply he had influenced me. So that's in some ways the origin of the book. And the second origin is in the years after his death, I started running much faster. I'd been a good marathoner. I'd, you know, run 10 marathons at about 2 hours and 40 minutes, and or 10 years of marathons at about 2 hours and 40 minutes. And in my 40s, my mid-40s, after my father's death, I got much faster. And I, you know, ran a 2:29, which is sort of a different class. I set an American record. I set a world leading time in the 50 mile. And I was trying to understand how I had gotten so much faster. And so those two interwoven stories, the death of my father, my understanding of why I had improved at a time when most people don't improve, became the origins of the book.
What is it about of the understanding of improvement, meaning that that was what you weren't initially realizing, that you were improving as much as you were?
No, I mean, it was startling, right? I mean, because like in my 30s, I trained so hard. I studied the sport. I really worked at it and I couldn't improve, right? I'd run a 2:43 marathon 1 year and 2:42 the next year and 2:45 the year after that. I was stuck. And I was at the age of 44 when I really started to improve. And I just had this curve where I ran 2:43, 2:38, 2:34, 2:29, and, you know, in consecutive marathons. And clearly there were physiological things that were happening. I was training a little bit harder. I was doing different kinds of workouts. I was eating a little bit better. But there were mental things that were happening where I was beginning to kind of break through what I had thought my limits were. And, you know, running's an interesting sport where the speed you go is determined by the efficiency of your cardiovascular system, the strength of your legs. But it's even more determined by your own self-perception of your limits. And when you think you can't go faster than a certain speed, your brain doesn't let your body go faster than that certain speed. And so that leads to this very interesting dilemma where you kind of have to trick your brain to allow you to go faster, but you can only use your brain to trick your brain. So it's like playing hide and seek with yourself. And so I went through this very complicated process of like learning how to convince myself that I could go faster.
You write, as you say, it was you're 43, 44, and it is the Chicago Marathon that really sets things up, the starting point to this.
Yeah, it was the Chicago Marathon in 2018 where I had my first breakthrough, where I ran 2:38, and I was just stunned. I'd set this very funny goal. I was 43 years old, and I said, "All right, I'm going to run better than 2 hours plus my age in minutes, so better than 2:43." And I thought that was almost an impossible goal. And then through the summer, I had these new coaches, this new training regimen, and I just started getting faster and faster. And I could feel it, and I could feel my body changing in a way it had never changed. And then presto, the day before the race, I meet with my coaches. They're these very sophisticated, smart folks at Nike. And they're like, "Well, given the wind, given what we've seen in your workouts, given our analysis of the last 30 days of your training, your heart rate, given the number of curves on the course and how fast we know you go around curves, we think you can run around 2:38." I was like, "Oh, well, we'll see." Then, of course, boom, 2:38.
What is it to realize that it's capable of someone else having that kind of understanding and precision to know what you're capable of and then actually achieving it?
Well, it's interesting, right? I mean, the question is, like, could I have achieved it if I didn't have these people convincing me that I could achieve it, right?
Like
Like, what if they had got,
on
if we'd
paper, it
been in that
says you
room,
can do this, right?
if they had said, you can run 2:39, would I finish in 2:39? If they had said 2:36, if they had said, like, well, I looked at it all and you can run 2:07, I would not have run 2:07. If they had said you can run 2:50, I would not have run 2:50. But I don't know how much having the external confidence of these brilliant folks with their machines, I don't know how much having that external confidence in, reset my internal thermostat and allowed me to accomplish it.
As you accomplish it, when do you start to think about the sport and what it is teaching, what it has taught you, what it is teaching you, and what it can teach others?
That was an obsession of mine all the way. From the time I got into the sport, my understanding of running just deepened every year. And, running is a very introspective sport. You're out by yourself, you're in the woods, you're usually doing it alone. I don't listen to music when I run. I'm in a very contemplative state. And over the years, I've learned to almost meditate while I run. And I'll focus on my breath, I'll focus on my feet, I'll focus on the time I'm in the air, I'll focus on what I hear. And, you do this and you think about a lot of things and you develop a better understanding of your work, your relationships, your children, but you also think a lot about running. And so over the years through running, I've developed a much more complex understanding of running. And then the moment that really convinced me that this was interesting, right? And that it'd be interesting to other people as opposed to just interesting to myself. I mean, talking about running can be so boring, right? And probably everybody who's listening has been at a cocktail party where someone's like talking about their marathon and like, "Oh my God, I did so much better, but if I'd had more Gatorade," they're just like, it's so boring, right? But the moment I thought that this could be interesting was when I was thinking about, well, why had I gotten so much faster? And to step back in time a little bit, in 2005, when I was 30, I'd run my first fast marathon. I ran my first 2:43. And then afterwards, I'd been diagnosed with thyroid cancer and I went through hell. And very hard. I knew I was going to survive, but it was extremely hard. I come out the other side. 2 years later, I run another 2:43. It's one of the greatest moments in my life. Like, I have overcome, I am still alive. And I realized that the reason why after that I had spent 12 years running the exact same time is that I was kind of locked into this perception that I could not be faster than the Nick Thompson before he had gotten sick. And so when I had that realization and I realized like how deep inside your limitations are buried, I thought, well, that's interesting, right? That like that's a story about running that people will want to read. And so that's when I began. I took that line of thought, and I took the line of thought about my father, and that was the initial impetus for the book.
Nicholas Thompson is our guest. He is the author of the new book, The Running Ground: A Father, a Son, and the Simplest of Sports. So, talk about what got you into the sport initially, because you would run with your father, right?
Yeah, I would run with my dad. So my dad, when I was 5 or 6, my dad was in this tricky moment where, he wasn't reaching his professional aspirations. He hadn't lived up to the incredibly high expectations that had been set for him as a young man when he'd been a, Rhodes Scholar, and John F. Kennedy had said this kid's gonna be president. And as a college sophomore, he'd been photographed by the Saturday Evening Post, with a story called The College Student. The kid, the guy was, is just had a remarkable early life and a lot of promise. But as he always said, he whom the gods wish to destroy, they first make promising. And so by the early 80s, he's 40 years old. You know, life's complicated. And he's coming to the realization that he's gay. And as this is all swirling, I'm 5 or 6, and he starts running. He starts running intensely. And to his great credit, he takes little Nick along with him. We run a mile. I run maybe 2 miles. I have a recollection of running 3 miles, which I believed I had done until I had a 6-year-old. And I was like, there's no way a 6-year-old can run 3 miles. But, you know, I certainly ran some distances with my father. So that was my introduction to the sport. And then he left the family when I was 6 or 7.
And yet running became still was very much a part of your life and something that you were interested in. At what point did you want to introduce it? I ask the question of introducing it to your kids, to your sons, but how much of that is an introduction and how much of it is because they've been around you doing it all their life?
And so they've just been around me doing it. I mean, they may object to my characterization, but my goal in parenting has always been to never make them do something or push them to do something, but to always be available if they want to do something. So to kind of give them the choice, but not, you know, not say, all right, kids, let's go running with dad. But if they say, hey, dad, can I come running with you? To say yes, always. They have taken to the sport, or two of the three of them have, for 2 reasons. One, they've seen me doing it my whole life. You know, they come and cheer the New York Marathon, and there's dad coming by, and like I'm usually with a, you know, I'm kind of near the front, right? And that's neat. And two, because they both have a love for soccer, and you can run faster in soccer, you get the ball, and that's a good thing. And so they both want to get better at soccer, and so they both run a lot.
Is it different for you, or do you look at it as what you get something different out of it when you were running with your kids?
Well, I love running with my kids only because it's a great opportunity to parents and to have interesting conversations, right? There's something about, you know, the kind of conversation you have when you're running at a slow pace is pretty good, right? It's like when you're in a car, right? You're not looking directly at the person, but you're near the person. And there's something about that sort of spatial setup that allows for a really good conversation. You can have, you know, different kinds of conversations when you're face to face, you're at a dinner table. But you can't leave. You can't leave the car, right? And you can't leave the run. And so, you know, running has a disadvantage over the car that you're like breathing heavily and eventually you get too tired to talk. But it's a good place to have a conversation. And I enjoy that. And of course, inside, I love that, you know, there's this thing that's important to me that I feel has deepened my understanding of the world, and my children go and do it with me. Now, that said, you know, the number of miles I run with my kids each year is not that high. I did have one amazing thing this summer, which is my middle son is now 15, and he is as fast as me in the mile, faster than me in everything shorter, slower than me in everything longer. But it meant that we were able to train together. So we'd go to the track and run 400 meter repeats. 400 meters is one time around the track. And I would lead one, he would lead one. I would lead one, he would lead one. And we'd do these intense workouts together, which was just incredible.
You write in the book about I think you're just turning 50 and you start to feel the effects of aging. What is that like to realize that as you're making this progress, there's also the biological clock, which is saying, oh, okay, well, you know, fun's fun.
You know, yeah, that's it's actually it's something I'm really going through right now, where I had this, I felt like that was happening to me in my late 30s, and I was like, oh man, you know, it's hard to be in your late 30s, it's hard to turn 40, and then clearly it wasn't happening because I got so much faster and so much stronger in my mid 40s. But now I can feel it. Like I'll go out for a run, it takes a lot longer to get going. You know, early in a run, I really struggle. I was running this morning at like 9.5 minute per mile pace, which is quite slow. It's not that different from walking, right? You walk at like a 12 to 15 minute mile pace if you're walking briskly, and just going up a little hill in San Francisco thinking, God, man, I am tired. It just takes a while to rev the engine, right? And I don't know what the physiological reason is for that. It takes forever for little injuries to heal. You know, I turned my ankle like a year ago and it's still sore. So the body just changes a little bit. And then, like, my maximal speed, running these sprints against my 11-year-old and just getting cooked, is that's a new experience. Now, all of that said, I can run 50 miles faster than I have ever been able to run. Like my 50-mile PR, I set a few months ago. So, takes a while to get going. I can't sprint, but you get the train moving and it goes at a pretty constant speed for a long time.
Nicholas Thompson is our guest. He is CEO of The Atlantic Magazine. He is also the author of the new book, The Running Ground: A Father, a Son, and the Simplest of Sports. You say in the book, I've struggled for years with the question of inheritance, what we give our children, what they reject from us, what they absorb without really knowing it. Talk a little bit about that for both your kids and the relationship with your dad.
It's so interesting, and I don't have a full theory on this, but you can do the best you can. You can try to set the best example and you can try to teach your kids things, but you have no idea what they're learning from. You have no idea. Like, one view I have is you act in the sort of the most generous, most ethical way. You act in the way that you model the behavior that you would like your children to, that you feel best reflects your values, and they absorb it or they don't absorb it. But you don't know when you're putting too much pressure on them. You don't know when you're giving them the right amount of pressure. The relationship is so intimate, so complex, and then they go off in such different ways that you really can't tell. And, just to give one example that's kind of funny, at the end of COVID, I couldn't find a marathon. And so I was like, you know what I'm going to do? Or not the end of COVID. It was like November of 2020. So all the races had been canceled. I was in good shape. I was like, I'm going to run a marathon. And so I went out in Prospect Park, where I live in Brooklyn. And I ran 26.2 miles. A friend of mine joined me for 20 of them around this little 2 mile loop, right? And I ran a fast marathon. I ran like 2:35 just by myself on a Saturday afternoon or Saturday morning. And I finished. And then I went back home. But I had clearly fried myself. I'd clearly like gone right to the edge, right? Or past the edge. And I lie down on the floor. And I watch a movie with my older son, and I'm like convulsing. I have a space heater next to me. It's warm in the house. I have a space heater. I have blankets, and I can't eat. I can't drink. And my son is like, "Oh, what's going on here?" And this is my older son, and he's like, "I am never going to run a marathon." Like he saw this particular act of obsession, right? I had gone out by myself, no one watching, no rewards. I don't get a medal. I don't get a space blanket. I don't even get a cookie at the end. And yet, I had driven myself to just total oblivion. And he was like, "That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen, and I'm never going to run a marathon." My little son wasn't there, but the next day, I guess I must have done it on a Sunday because the next day is Monday. And I'm walking in the park with a friend, and I see this little kid in a blue jacket running. I'm like, "Wait, that's my kid. He's like out here running by himself." And I say, "I'm like, what are you doing?" He's like, "Oh, I wanted to run a loop." And so, like, somehow this act that had like terrified my oldest son had inspired my youngest son. Like, my youngest son was like, "That's cool. Like, dad's a nutcase and I want to be like that." So you just don't know, right? The very same act can, make one child act one way and the other the other way. And so my grandfather tried to do his best with my father and you created all these horrible burdens. My father tried to do his best for me and both gave me many gifts. And also created all these terrible burdens. I don't know. I don't know when my kids are older what their reflections will be on me. But that's part of what the running ground's about. It's about what are the lessons we give and how do we give the very best.
I'd like to, I guess, end by asking you how things are going at the Atlantic, because
Great.
I find this as a magazine that has been around for so long, and yet now is sort of seen as necessary reading for so many of us, and really helping us through a very difficult, turbulent times.
Yeah, that's our goal. We were a magazine founded, shortly before the American Civil War by, people like Ralph Waldo Emerson, Harriet Beecher Stowe, Henry David Thoreau. And the idea was like, let's create a magazine. They famously said in the founding statement of no party or clique, devoted to the American idea, right? What does it mean to be America? How can we talk about the big issues in America? How can we get the best writers in the world to discuss, what it means for this country to exist? And We've tried to hold to that. And so right now, the Atlantic has a great writers collective of people with different views and different opinions, and there can be no reader who agrees with every article we publish because no one at the Atlantic does. And so, we thrive in times of turbulence because people are looking for accurate, fact-checked, beautifully written places where they can, be intellectually challenged, where they can find, beautiful articulations of stuff they agree with and then beautiful articulations of stuff they hate. And that's what we're doing, and it's certainly working right now.
And we hope we continues to work that way. Although making the world a simpler place wouldn't be horrible.
I mean, it would not be the worst thing if suddenly, like, America was calm, everybody got along, and like there was great civil discourse, and there wasn't just constant turbulence. It'd be bad for our business model, but yes, I would take that over the world we live in today. We've always thrived at times of crisis. The Atlantic has always risen to the occasion and done well.
Nicholas Thompson's new book is The Running Ground, A Father, A Son, and the Simplest of Sports. Nicholas, what a pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us. A delight to speak with you.
Oh, it's so fun. It was great chatting with you. Asked wonderful questions. I'm so glad to connect with you and your audience.
Thank you very much. Again, Nicholas Thompson's new book is The Running Ground, A Father, A Son, and the Simplest of Sports. It is published by Random House. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.